We kick off hour number three of Three and Out. Nate Hodges, Houston Kress, Billy Williford. Don't forget programming announcement, The Blitz with Rick Butler, Chance Collins, and Brandon Orrick will debut May 28th. And follow us here from 10 until noon with our new lineup at Fan Run Radio. It'll be Three and Out, then The Blitz, Talk Sports, The Drive, and Overtime as we bring you market-leading local sports talk more than anybody else right here in Knoxville. May 28th is when all that goes into effect. Trey Wallace to The Drive. If you're still confused by his final segment on It's Optional a while back, well, now it's all cleared up for you. And It's Optional will continue to air through that Friday before Memorial Day weekend. But then after that, the new lineup, Trey Wallace to The Drive. The Blitz will debut from 10 until noon, and Talk Sports will slide back into the noon to 3 window. Let's talk some Tennessee football recruiting, Houston.
I am confused.
Apparently, they've offered Marvin Harrison's son. He's a four-star 2021 prospect.
Okay.
Jeremy Pruitt, I got to say, whether recruiting is going good, bad, it really hasn't been ugly at all. I mean, it's been pretty great or pretty good or pretty above average across the board, I would say, especially for where Tennessee is. I like the wide net. I'm starting to come around on the whole, like, we offer more people than anybody. Damn right we do. Because
sure.
We work harder than anyone else.
Yes.
Like, I don't know if Jeremy Pruitt will know the rules of the review system this year during games. I don't know that if okay. he'll – I don't know if the offensive play calling – I know Chaney knows his stuff. I know Pruitt knows his stuff. I don't know if that relationship is going to work or not. I hope it does. I think it will. I think they have great respect for each other. I think it'll go great, but I don't know that. What I do know is we work our ass off in recruiting. You got the Moose is loose, Brian Niedermeyer out there throwing around offers, drumming up interest, getting guys to commit. They're working.
They are working.
They're always out there throwing out offers. And sometimes guys commit. And then sometimes guys who are committed release their top six. And I would think you'd be in it. But what happened yesterday?
The tweet has since been deleted.
So maybe it was a Photoshop issue, a typo. Maybe it was a you know. No big deal, right? Maybe? Hopefully? Please?
Tennessee still holds a commitment from Jordan Davis, JUCO, defensive end from Copiah Lincoln Community College in Weston, Mississippi. He's a four-star JUCO prospect, the number two ranked JUCO prospect in the country, behind, also committed to Tennessee, Art Green, cornerback from Hutchinson Community College. Yes, I want to make sure it wasn't junior college.
Yeah.
Yes, community college. Yesterday, Jordan Davis releases a graphic with his top six.
Top six, all right. Top six. Well, he means commit to us, so we should be at the top of the top six. We should be number one. Were they in order?
One would assume that is correct.
Yeah.
They were not in order.
Oh, no order. Okay.
I don't think.
Well, we can just assume that we're number one if there's six and there's no order and he's committed to us.
Well, no.
Oh.
Because Tennessee was not listed in the top six.
Wait, what?
Tennessee did not have their logo in the top six.
Here's a question. Why even have a top six if you're committed?
Well, I don't know. I don't know why he deleted the tweet unless he realized, oops, forgot to tell Tennessee, you know, the team I'm committed to, that I'm not committed to them. Or maybe it was a saved tweet, a scheduled tweet from many, many moons ago.
He had the wrong date. It was actually 5/16/2018, and he had scheduled it.
Yeah.
But he scheduled it for the wrong date.
Maybe.
And between last year and this year, he warmed up to Tennessee, committed to Tennessee, and now.
It's actually possible, I suppose, that was just a say, you know, is in the hopper and.
I don't know. Of course, people on the message boards immediately said, we didn't want him anyway.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you do.
He's not.
Yes, you do.
Our coaches told him to get.
No, they did not.
Whether that's the truth or not for any player, like, it's just something. Like, it either is or it isn't. But the funny thing that people say that every time a kid decommits is funny.
I don't understand what happened. I don't. Because there was no follow-up. He just deleted the tweet. Just deleted it.
Dang, didn't even list us in his top six. That smells of perhaps Coach Jeremy Pruitt told him to get.
Nah, I don't think so. When Alabama's still in the top six, I don't think that's what that means.
What is going on?
I don't know. Don't know what it means. Again, he deleted it, but he didn't offer up any info. I got nothing, man. Maybe it really was an accident. Maybe he is still committed to Tennessee. Maybe that was an old graphic. Maybe a friend stole his phone. Maybe I don't know. He's still listed as a commit on the sites, and I haven't seen any, you know, Ryan Callahan,
yeah,
Brent Hubbs, anybody like that say otherwise. So perhaps it was just a mistake and we should just move on. And he's still committed and everything's fine. I have no information other than he released the top six that Tennessee wasn't in and then deleted the top six.
That's so weird. I mean, we tried to kind of ask Ryan Callahan that idea of like, hey, do you guys think you'll ever have to kind of change, you know, how you handle like who's committed and who's not? Because it seems like it's very, very wishy-washy at this point. And how do you decide when a guy, you know, goes in the rankings and doesn't? Like, what if he says he's committed, but you can kind of tell he isn't? I mean, really the only answer we kind of got is, well, we just kind of have to, if they say they're committed, we just kind of have to put them on there and then wait until they officially say something about decommitting to take them off. So the fact that a lot of people that I saw last night, Tennessee fans, were saying, oh, he's decommitted. This is what a way to decommit.
And I don't know that that's the case.
I don't either. Most of those people quickly said that too. It was like, well, maybe that's not what this means. So very, very odd.
I really don't have anything else to say about it because I don't know anything.
I mean, what's the kid? Art Green is the one that just committed. And
was he upset that we took another JUCO player not at the same position and that JUCO player jumped him in the rankings?
Well, that's what I was wondering.
He's like, I'm going to be the top JUCO that goes to Tennessee. I am. And then he's not, so he decommits. That doesn't seem like a reason you would decommit from a school.
No, not at all. Just extremely, extremely weird.
Especially at a position of need where you're going to play early and often. Like if you like Tennessee enough to commit, I mean, he committed a long, long time ago, didn't he? Yeah, he committed last November. He's been committed for a bit, and now, I mean, his 24/7 profile says the other schools that he was even considering were, like, cool, Colorado and Oregon, and then no interest whatsoever in Alabama and Mississippi State. I do think all four of those teams made the top six graphic, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe he just tweeted the wrong graphic.
Yeah, that's possible, I guess. I mean,
seems like you would follow up with wrong graphic. Sorry, update coming
soon.
Yeah,
that's true. I don't know. I mean, the insiders are saying that Tennessee has still been talking to him and that at least it seemed like he was still a part of the class. So this whole, like, coach told him to get things, a non-starter. But, of course, you know, no one really knows. Because it's...
I sure don't.
Very, very strange.
Yeah. Very odd.
And you got a long way to go. You know, it's May.
Yeah. I just don't know. He tweeted a top six. Tennessee wasn't in it. He deleted it. That's all we know. I don't know if we want to really dance around this thing for
a
while.
Does it make you... Some fans... feel like you get better players if it's the ones that aren't don't have the dramatic recruitments? Do you think there's anything to that, or do you think it's just like anything else? Just
well,
people.
This wasn't
just
a dramatic recruitment until this. Like, it's not.
Apparently, he's been a little bit of a diva before, but I don't know.
I don't know enough about
where people got that.
I don't know
from. Apparently, Hubs at one point a long time ago said this guy's recruitment has a long way to go. Like back when he committed, said it's kind of like our boy Art Green, where he said I'm committed, but I'm definitely going to visit Georgia and Florida. So you could kind of say, well, he's committed, but this one still feels like there's a long way to go. Apparently, that was also said
Daniel Abramson
a year ago.
Just tweeted in, maybe he just forgot he had committed to Tennessee. Oh yeah, I am committed to those guys. Probably should put them in the top six.
As funny as that is, that to me seems like the most likely
oh God
answer right now.
What does that say about Tennessee if you forget you're committed to them? But they've been in communication. I don't know, man.
I don't know. They
got to follow this stuff a little closer than that. You don't just forget. You're listed as a Tennessee commit on every site that exists. Like, how do you forget that?
Well, that's true.
Maybe he's just so focused on football and academics that he does not care about recruiting sites.
Well, there was a really interesting piece put out by Max Olson of The Athletic that connects recruiting with transferring, and I want to share some of these numbers on the flip side because it is staggering. And, of course, Tennessee had Drew Richmond stuck in the transfer portal for what seemed like
months.
Forever, and this is going to become more and more of a thing moving forward, and it's going to impact not only your transfers and if you're taking transfers, but how you recruit possibly. So we'll hit on that next. Stick with us right here for more college football talk on 3 and Out. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. Friday edition of the program, talking college football. Tennessee's got some recruiting to work out with Jordan Davis and figure out if is you in or is you out. Max Olson for The Athletic wrote just a fantastic piece, released it yesterday. The fuzzy math of the NCAA transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he's got a lot of interesting statistics in here. Second of all, he has quotes from Herm Edwards. I mean, that's hitting for the cycle right there.
What more do you need?
It opens. Herm Edwards has watched more than a dozen of his Arizona State football players put their names into the NCAA transfer portal this offseason. Some thought they could find better opportunities. Some got passed up by younger players, and some just didn't fit. And Edwards says, that's okay. I know it's about Herm Edwards, but there has to be some of that with Jeremy Pruitt, right? I mean, he's a guy that openly told his players at halftime, you guys don't start playing with better effort. I'm just going to get 25 new ones. I mean, there's definitely a college basketball coach I once talked to in a one-on-one setting. Was like, yeah, we just, behind the scenes, we just say we're over-recruiting like these players. I mean, it's over-recruiting at its core, and that's what you have to do to become a better team. You got some of these Butch Jones players that, yeah, they might have had a decent star rating because they had got an SEC offer from Tennessee and went there. But sometimes Jeremy Pruitt, and in this case Herm Edwards at Arizona State, as he tries to take that program to new levels, you just got to get better players in. So you're going to have some guys transfer. Olson writes, he gets it. He's not afraid to call this free agency. He wishes his kids the best and does what he can to help. And six have been fortunate enough to land at FBS programs. But as he watches the new transfer landscape unfold nationally, Edwards can't help but notice how many college football transfers still don't know where they're heading and wonder if they knew what they were getting into. Edwards said some of them are just still sitting there trying to figure out what just happened. Well, reality just happened. The harsh reality is that there are hundreds of FBS players out there who have yet to find new homes. Although there's still time for many of them to land in good spots, they're learning the hard way what a risky proposition it has become to try to transfer in college football. The portal has become an open marketplace, struggling with an extremely basic issue. Too much supply, limited demand. At just the Power 5 level, more than 450 players have entered the portal, and at the moment, 240 of them are uncommitted. Including group of five players, the total available is far more than 400. A more telling reality check from the portal era: of the more than 450 looking to leave Power 5 schools, only 20%. Here's the stat I wanted to hit. 20% have ended up at another Power 5 program. So kid goes in the portal, you got a 1 in 5 shot, buddy, of even getting it to another Power 5 school.
But they are guaranteed the ability to go back to the school they're leaving, correct? Like, once you enter the transfer portal, you don't have to transfer, right?
You don't. Like, I guess, but maybe I think the understanding here is that the coach goes, okay, got to make a plan, got to.
That's what I'm wondering. I guess it depends on, does the coach make a move or not? That's what I'm wondering. Like, when does the scholarship stop if you enter the transfer portal?
Well, here's the big problem, and with recruiting, and this is kind of how it ties back into what we were talking about last segment. A spot doesn't open up in recruiting because that kid left. You can still, the 25 hard number.
I mean roster spot. Because you can go get a grad transfer to fill the spot. Doesn't count against the recruiting number. But you're right. You can't sign more than 25.
Right, no matter what.
But you can sign 25 and then go get 5 transfers if you have the room for them.
No, you can't. That's the problem. Transfers count towards a class. Remember, we learned this last year.
Oh.
Like, Keller Chris had to count in a recruiting class. So that's the problem with the rule. And that's something I'd forgotten, too, until I read this yesterday.
That's right, because, yeah, the back counted or forward counted.
In the 2019 recruiting class, Power 5 schools finished with an average of 22 signees. So they're even leaving a few spots on average.
Makes sense. I mean, you can only have 85 on the roster.
Yeah. These recruiting staffs can get creative with their accounting and find ways to squeeze in more than 25, but the point is this. If you sign 22, you can only take 3, 4, maybe 5 transfers this offseason. There are extreme exceptions. Miami signed 17, so the Hurricanes have been able to bring in 8 transfers. But in general, the limit of 25 initial counters doesn't allow for many portal acquisitions. Now, that's true. If you're signing 25 each year, you're going to be out of 85 slots. But even if you have a lot of attrition, you don't have room in your next 25 to sign transfers because they have to count. Bringing in a transfer counts as a new player, but losing a transfer doesn't open a spot up. It's a huge problem with the NCAA that no one, I guess, thought about until now.
Math. Not the NCAA's best quality.
And then here's one of the quotes. They have, talking about the players, they have no idea, none, that the NCAA put in the hard 25 initial rule in, another Power 5 staffer said. They think anyone can go anywhere. So these players are just thinking, I'm a good player. Somebody, you know, this other school will want me, but that other school might already have just literally not have any space. Or, as I think a lot of times happens, would prefer the high schooler that they think is going to be at least just as good as you.
Right.
And will get 3 to 4 years out of if they're right. A far more frustrating complication to this, coaches say, is when you do lose players to the portal, you don't have room to replace them. This has emerged as a popular topic of discussion and consternation in conference coaches' meetings in recent weeks, as coaches who have lost a lot of players this offseason come to realize it may take them years to get back to the 85-man scholarship limit.
Well, that was my issue with this thing from the get-go. You know, if you're going to make transferring so easy, you need to make the acquisition of replacement players for that school easy also. So capping them at 25 doesn't make a lot of sense.
It seems like gaining a transfer should be another limit or something. Like, you can take 10 more, you know, but all or whatever. I don't know.
Well, it shouldn't have anything to do with recruiting.
Aren't you still bound by the 85? Why not be able to take as many transfers as you want?
That's what I'm saying. That's been my thing from the get-go. The issue, though, becomes when people would sign, like, 35 a year, knowing that they're going to tell the worst 10, essentially, in every class, hey, hit the bricks.
And I guess you could do that. You could bring in 20 transfers and then cut 15 of the worst kids, whether they're your new freshman or your transfer.
Right.
You could say, all right, here are the 15 worst guys. And you might even say, yeah, this guy only has 2 years left, so he's tied with this guy, so we're going to cut him.
Keep the 4-year
You can have tryouts, and nobody wants that. Edwards says the Sun Devil scholarship count is currently in the low 70s, and it'll take him 2 years to make it up.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it's 25. Theoretically, you get 100 every 4 years, but it doesn't really work that way.
No.
Because guys leave, guys go early, whatever, guys transfer. We need some way to replace some of those guys, says Virginia Tech coach Justin Fuente, who had 12 players leave for various reasons. Oh, and he talks about player safety. Some of these guys just have to quit because they're injured. With Tennessee's going through that.
Well, yeah, like that's the thing. The player retiring, so to speak,
yeah,
opens up an 85 spot, but it doesn't add to...
Yeah, it can't be a 26 spot for a new class,
correct,
right?
Correct.
That's a mess. That,
I don't know if you could do that like annually and set the number. Like, hey, it's 25 plus the number of open spots that you have on the 85 roster. So let's say I graduate 20 seniors and have 10 players transfer. I'm now down to 55. I should be able to sign or add transfers up to 30, I would think.
Yeah, I think the problem again is like if you went to some type of model where you could get more transfers in based on losing more, then they're afraid some coaches would run off a bunch of their current players, then go into the transfer portal and try to replace them with better players, and you really would have free agency at that point.
Well,
yeah.
It's not working out for the players right now.
Fuente says, I think it starts with player safety. You walk into spring ball with one running back, it's a pretty tough situation. So you move a guy to running back. Then he wants to transfer because he didn't want to switch to running back.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a never-ending cycle. It does seem fair to find a way to address it. To find a way to address some of that.
I understand that the NCAA doesn't want colleges over-signing. That's why the 25 limiter was, you know, put in place to begin with. But you're still technically over-signing at 25. That's 15 more, as you pointed out. Over a four-year span, that's 15 more scholarships than you have spots. Maybe we need to look at what the number is for readjustment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, the NCAA is saying you can over-sign by 15, but no more, which is essentially the NCAA saying 15 is their number that they're comfortable with as far as players leaving early, getting injured, quitting, whatever. Maybe we need to look at that number and also look at the number as far as replacement. Because I totally get, like, I don't want Alabama signing 40 guys every year, but Alabama's not the type of team that's really worried about, you know, filling their roster and getting to the 85 number. If I have 35 open scholarships available, I should be able to fill that in a given year up to the number I want. So let's say I've got 35 spots, but I want to leave 5 open for whatever. I should be able to go get 30, and I should be able to get 35 if I want to. I don't understand why the NCAA... I mean, you'd think you would want all of the teams to be full roster-wise, and that's going to also help the players in the transfer portal land elsewhere.
Yeah.
It shouldn't hurt the recruiting number. Like, that number should be 25. It should be 25 from JUCO or high school, and then transfers should just count towards the 85, not the recruiting. It doesn't make any sense.
I know. It's really dumb that Herm Edwards is going to have, like, 70 kids on scholarship, where he would prefer to have 85, and there's 15 kids sitting in the transfer portal that can't find a Power 5 school to go play for. Like, can't we match those up? Can't we say,
well, but that's the thing. It's not that they don't have schools that are interested. It's that they don't have schools that either value them more than a four-year high school recruit or that want to add them to either this class, last year's class,
right,
or forward.
Right.
It's a value-based system, and most of the guys, I mean, realistically, most of the guys who enter the transfer portal, it's not working out. Like, it's not like you dominate at
right.
a school and then like, I want to see if I can go somewhere better, because those guys get scooped up immediately. These are guys who, frankly, aren't very good trying to transfer.
They've had some issues somewhere.
Right. And schools are saying, you're not really good enough and I don't want to waste my spot on you. I mean, like you enter the transfer portal, like, that's your choice. That's your risk to take. So... But you could get more of those guys to land on a roster spot somewhere if you made it a little easier for the schools to do so without being penalized in the recruiting number.
Yeah, like if Herm Edwards could put a few of those players on his team for the next 2 years as he then gets in new freshmen, then that theoretically would work a lot better. Like
right.
what you're saying, where it doesn't count. It doesn't limit his ability to bring in more freshmen. It just helps him fill out the roster and then gives those guys an opportunity to show out and say, hey, look, I am better than the starter here,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
A really interesting point here, you mentioned this a second ago. We have seen a small number of players enter the portal, have a change of heart, and stay put. Washington's Jacob Sermon, Alabama's Iabe Onoma, and several players of Virginia Tech and Penn State arrived at that conclusion, and in a lot of ways, that's a win-win. But every coach has to decide how permissive they're willing to be about players exploring their options. Mm-hmm. Some are pulling a player's scholarship once he enters the portal.
Yeah.
At Pitt, Narduzzi says they're not coming back. If you go in, you can't have 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
If I was a coach, that's what I would do. Hey, you're going to make the best decision for you, but you're not going to get to play both sides of this fence. I'm not going to be hamstrung waiting on what do I need to do in my job while you decide whether you want to go somewhere else that might be better or that is better or that isn't better or come back. I'm not waiting around for you. If you're thinking about transferring, you've already really mentally checked out anyway, I would assume.
Added Herm Edwards. When it happens, you've got one way to go as a coach. You've got to cut their aid. I thought that said ass for a second. You've got to cut their ass.
Both are good.
Hey.
It's the same thing.
Hey, I want to keep my scholarship. I'm imagining Herm I want to keep my scholarship, but I'm going to go look. No, no, no. If you're going to go look, you're gone.
I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird to put it that way when you think about it. That's like someone looking for a new job while they're still employed but doing their job well. It's like, hey, I ran across your resume on resumes.com. What's going on? It's like, oh yeah, just floating it out there to see if something better comes along. Would you fire that employee immediately? Some bosses would.
Some bosses would.
So some I guess it's wouldn't. I mean, I guess maybe that's it. It's coach's discretion.
Yeah. Pretty shocking though.
But I think in fairness, once I could apply to a job in secret. I mean, right. The resumes.com thing was a joke. I can apply to a job in secret. You cannot enter the transfer portal in secret.
Right.
So maybe this needs – maybe we don't need to see the transfer portal. Maybe it needs to be a – coaches don't know who's in it unless
– Then that opens you up to tampering the other direction.
No, I know.
Where
I know.
Coaches start going after
I'm just
guys.
Saying if we're trying to make this as kind of real world as possible.
It's dicey. For sure. Welcome back to Three and Out Friday edition of the program. That's Houston singing. I'm Nate. Billy's on the P's and Q's over there on the board. Appreciate you guys tuning in. So we talked a lot of Tennessee sports today. You can always check out the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes too. Give us a good rating. We'd appreciate that. Well, you know, 5-star rating. Obviously. It's a weird time of year. You got, a bunch of sports running. And before we get off the transfers, Mitchell did tweet in that Derek Walker heading to Nebraska. We hadn't mentioned that this week. He did announce that. I know, Billy, you said that's a terrible fit for him.
It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, Fred runs this offense that it's kind of up and down, shoots a lot of threes. Derek Walker might have been our slowest player last year.
Maybe they need an enforcer. Maybe they need one guy that can come in and
a goon.
Goon it up.
He will foul you. So
it's with the sports world, you got the NBA playoffs going on, you got the NHL playoffs going on, and then you have a golf major just boom, thrown right in here. Just moved the PGA up to the middle of May. And boy, did yesterday get started on fire with Brooks Koepka at Bethpage Black. He shoots 63. It's a course record. Ties the PGA's lowest round ever. And the golf headline on ESPN is Brooks Koepka is the monster Tiger created.
maybe fair to say. Koepka, pretty good round yesterday. 7-under. Course record. Tying low round ever in a major.
Have you seen some of these holes, too? They're like, okay, they're at the par 3, 248 yard. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson's 4 shots back in second. Wait, that's not right.
Tommy Fleetwood is
what
4 is shots
Dustin
back.
Johnson
what
was.
What is this?
You were right. He's played 6 holes. He's 200 today. Dustin Johnson, 4 shots back, second place at -3.
Okay. Who was
tied
in second?
With Fleetwood.
Who was in second yesterday?
I'm not sure.
When that ended?
I'm not sure. Tiger Woods.
I thought somebody shot 64. Oh, my gosh. It's Danny Lee. Okay. So that's what happened. I didn't realize Danny Lee had already teed off. He's +5 through 11 today.
Ew.
Dude shot 64 yesterday. and he's plus 5 through 11. So that's why I saw Dustin Johnson second.
Yeah, he's down like, 7 spots today. Through
I was 11. Like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Yeah, Dustin Johnson's now in second because Danny Lee has just fallen apart. Couldn't sleep on second place last night, I guess.
And remember, Koepka, I know totally different courses, but he won this.
Yeah, he won it last year.
Yeah, so he's the defending champ.
Tiger Woods will tee off today at 149. He shot a 72 yesterday. He is plus 2, 9 shots back from Koepka, who will also tee off today at 149.
Yeah, same group. With Malinari.
I didn't know if they switched them. I guess they switch them tomorrow.
Yes.
What do you mean? Oh yeah,
after the cut.
Okay.
Yeah, the first two rounds, same three guys play. They just invert morning to afternoon.
Gotcha.
And afternoon to morning.
Makes sense.
And I would assume these guys get to start on the front nine today. Also, they had to start on the back yesterday.
Tiger Woods was plus 2 after the first hole, and so he parred out the 17 holes after one. But problem was Koepka was just. I'm just saying he played par. I'm not saying he shot par
on all of them.
But Koepka was just, he's dominating.
I mean, Woods is tied for 48. There's 154 golfers or something. So, I mean, he had had a slightly above average round yesterday, but he was playing with Koepka, who
was
just went light.
Incredible.
I mean, in fact, if Koepka doesn't exist, you know, Woods is 5 shots off the lead right now.
Yeah.
And he hasn't even teed off
yet. Yeah, we'll see what happens today. See if there's any settling. Woods comes up a little bit. Koepka maybe drops down. But after that, minus 7, yikes. It's going to be tough to catch that boy.
I used to feel like when a guy would do this, and maybe this is the Tiger Woods phenomenon, when a guy would go like super low on Thursday, it was like, yeah, that guy's not going to win. Like he'll like this Danny Lee, he'll fall apart or he'll now shoot, you know, one over for three rounds and somebody will kind of put together a few lower rounds just overall. But Tiger was the first guy to just blow that theory out of the water because there were majors where like it wasn't usually on Thursday, it was usually on Friday.
Yeah.
But Woods on Friday would have these monster low rounds and then you just never catch him.
Right. Well, there was a while where being tied or behind, he had never come back on a Sunday to win a major.
Yeah, because he's always just from the front.
Right. He's done that now. But yeah, he was the guy who just kind of and then that's where the mental thing came in. He posts such a crazy number that other guys are, oh, well, I have to play perfectly to even have a chance because he's not going to go that low, but he's not going to just duff one for 18 holes either.
And Koepka's been the guy most recently to play that style, to be able to go low and then just
– he
like he might not shoot another 63, but I don't think anybody expects Koepka to come out and be 5 over today. I mean, he's probably going to play pretty well.
Yeah, he's going to be okay. But, well, you know. Other guys can play well enough.
Sure.
We'll see.
It's a long way to go. And Bethpage Black, there's a chance that, you know, you can start struggling for sure with the rough. And they were talking yesterday about how these guys, every time they hit the fairway, it's like this massive sigh of relief because the rough's just, I mean, I remember when they played the U.S. Open there, and it was gnarly. It was awful.
Yeah, Phil took wood out of his bag to put a 2-iron in there just because of the rough.
Two iron.
I got to keep this thing straight. We can't have any flailing about.
You know who didn't play very well yesterday, but looked like he was enjoying himself?
Big John Daly. I am confused. I need to be fair also. Woods and Koepka started on hole 10 yesterday, so he did not double bogey
one.
He double bogeyed his first hole, which was 10. So
gotcha.
He did have two double bogeys yesterday on holes 10 and 17, which would be holes 1 and 8 of his round. Three birdies. Did have an eagle on hole 4, 13th hole of his day, but then had bogeys on 3 of his last 5. So he's kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get rid of those doubles and maybe one of those bogeys or two, it looks like he's at least... I mean, he played... well, except when he played really bad, if that makes sense. This was a all-over-the-board type of round for Tiger, so it seems like he's at least got something going when he doesn't implode. But yes, John Daly, I have a couple of questions. So Tiger had a broken leg and was not allowed to use a golf cart. There was one guy who had a fake leg a while back and was not allowed to use a golf cart, but John Daly is allowed to use a golf cart?
Do you know what?
I don't.
Do you know what tournament those were in? Because since this is being a championship, Daly was quoted, "There's no way I can walk it, but I feel like I belong to play because I am a past champion."
Does it have to do with the way he's qualified for the event? Like,
right,
if you're a past champion, they're trying to make sure you...
Well, I don't know.
I mean, there's certain, because there's certain majors where if you've won it, if you've won that major, you're then invited back for life. There's certain ones where there's other ones where, like, you win, so you get a 10-year exemption for the other majors, different stuff like that. So I don't know. Maybe that does have something. It's been a whole thing. I mean, there was that one guy that, like, had a disability, I remember, years and years ago, and that was the whole debate. And he got to use a card on some tournaments and then not on others or whatever. John Daly just out there with his Diet Coke.
Well, that's what
McDonald's
made it so funny
cup.
Is you would think if you're going to get the exemption to use a cart, you would want to be as inconspicuous as possible.
Right.
Inconspicuous and John Daly do not often run together in the same sentence. John Daly between holes. And this isn't really that rare. There, over the history of golf, there have been quite a few players who smoke a cigarette between holes, you know, kind of when the cameras are off of them or whatever. John Daly cruising around on a golf cart, just chain smoking Marlboro Reds and with a McDonald's supersized Diet Coke in the cup holder. What I thought was really funny too is he parked on a hill the other day and didn't even put the parking brake on. He just turned it sideways so it couldn't roll down. I'm like, you might want to be careful. There could be an incident here. Mm. But John Daly, I don't know. Like, they asked Tiger Woods about it. Did you see what he said? He said,
"No, what did he say?"
He said, "I had to walk when I had a broken leg." Tiger was not happy about John Daly getting the car. Apparently, a lot of guys not happy that he gets to use a car. And one in Stripes tweets in, the ADA is the reason he's allowed to use it. All past champs are allowed to play. I totally get that. But being allowed to play and then being given the golf cart, and I don't really care. I think if anyone's injured or whatever, if there's a legitimate reason with a doctor's note or something, yeah, sure, give him a cart. I don't care. But it is kind of strange that people have been denied carts for what I would say are more serious injuries, and John Daly just cruising around with cigarettes and Diet Coke, and just that's John Daly.
Hmm. Well, I just got updates from the AL Lots Field Day. Apparently, my daughter's class won. It's been a big deal over here. Breaking news. I mean, John Daly in a golf cart or, fourth grade Field Day victories.
Just had... Congrats, man.
Sorry for the interruption.
Just steal the limelight. It's an important note for the listener.
Final segment, three and out, from the most non-breaking news to actual breaking news. I mean, this is...
I would have preferred to just stick with Field Day.
Right. That would have been better. But, unfortunately... We have this. Should we just play the audio? All right. Fade down Rocky Top, Billy. It's just not a Rocky Top type of moment here.
I guess it kind of is.
Turn up Houston's mic.
That was one of Davey's number, like top 10.
Well, it's okay. It's fine. Rocky Top on Friday to go out, it's fine. But this, I mean, we knew this was coming.
Well, my decision is that I'm going to stay in the NBA draft after receiving this feedback from NBA teams and how I perform, what I'm hearing. I feel confident in myself and my game as well as what I'm hearing from teams, and I'm excited to take this next step in my journey. To Vol fans, honestly, I just want to thank you because there's not much more I can say because you guys have been there for me. You've been amazing to me, and it's been a great 3 years. It's been a great process. I want to thank my teammates, my coaches, as well as you all, because without you all, I wouldn't be where I am at today. And please continue to guide me and please be there for me because Vol Nation has the best support in the world. And I really want to thank Garrett Maidenwald, Coach Rick Barnes, Coach Michael Schwartz, Coach Rob Lanier, Coach Kim English, and also Coach Desmond Oliver, who's my guy. He's my lead recruiter, and I just want to thank them personally. And thank God, thank my parents, and everybody who helped me and influenced me in my decision. And all I have to say is go Vols.
I told you. He played well yesterday.
You did.
He's going top 20, isn't he?
Top 15.
Maybe higher.
What's the highest we've seen? 13? That's it, right? That's the max. That's the ceiling. I mean, that hurts hearing it. That's what I thought would happen. It's just coming a little earlier than it's not Saturday. It's not tomorrow, like you said. It's not May 29th. Like we kind of first thought it might last until.
It's going to be so different next year.
Yeah, it's now official. I mean, I guess Bone could theoretically come back, but even if he does now, it's going to be – I mean, it was the Grant Williams show for the last two seasons. It was we won a game because we went through Grant, or we lost a game. Why didn't Grant get the ball more? Or we lost a game because Grant missed a shot. It was this team's incredible because of Grant Williams, or this team's incredible because it starts with Grant Williams. And I know, you know, Admiral Schofield deserves a ton of credit, Jordan Bone – every other guy on that roster that played, and even the guys that they practice against, you know, that whole team deserves a ton of credit for all the success they've had the last couple years. But it's definitely the end of an era with that announcement right there.
Man, thought I got to wait till tomorrow to be sad. Guess not. Mitchell tweets in, my bet is the team has told him to shut it down and guaranteed him a first-round promise. He says, Jazz. Jazz have guaranteed him that first-round pick.
Where did they pick? Anybody remember that?
23rd, maybe.
Okay.
I mean, if you're guaranteed to fall no lower than 23rd, and perhaps another team comes in and swipes you before that, seems like a pretty safe bet to just say I'm sticking with it. Well, dang.
End of an era.
One
in Stripes says, "Come on over, Blackshear."
Please God, Blackshear.
Somebody.
Urals. Uros is going to commit in like 2 seconds. Like, that was the spot. Dang. I was hopeful. I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
Like, this is great.
It's good.
This is good for Tennessee, ultimately, just like long term, just not good for Tennessee next year. Because, as I've said, Tennessee would have been better next year had Grant Williams returned to play for the Vols. I am still on that bandwagon.
The hottest of hot takes. Yeah.
But, yeah, now, well, that opens up another spot to go get a transfer or signee. So now we have to see what Rick Barnes does. And then let's not forget, when Bone makes his decision in 12 days, might be another spot. So again, we've said it before, team going to look very different next year than they did this past season. Woo! Well, that was a good sign-off on the show. Thanks for doing it before 10 o'clock, I guess, Grant.
Yeah,
appreciate the help,
man. We got
to
at least, I guess, break it down for a
Rod,
minute.
You're banned from the show.
Seriously,
your
Rod.
Stupid sources.
Yeah, get rid of Gary, Rod. Burn him.
He's,
burn the
a, he's a liar. Juanita, done.
Tennessee baseball, tonight 6:30, tomorrow noon.
They can win the series tonight.
The NCAA tournament. Lots going on. We'll talk about it all from an exciting sports weekend on Monday. Talk Sports is next. Keep it right here for more Fan Run Radio.
Need a drink.